Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yana. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and the deadly myths associated with religion and politics, patriotism in the media, with military and economic schemes, and of course now with international espionage. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring behind these headlines while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone credible voice in an exceedingly disingenuous world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion, you're more than welcome to disagree with the host, or most especially with the producer of the show. It's toll-free, 877-300-7645. Just kidding, Scott. You know, it is interesting that we continue to focus on the capture. Where is Waldo? The capture of the quote-unquote spy, the man assumed guilty of espionage. And all that is doing is effectively diverting public attention away from the spying. The President of the United States says, you know, he wants to track him down and have him turned over in full compliance with the law. And yet, this president swore to uphold the law of this land. This is a republic, which means it's a nation based upon law. That law is the Constitution. And yet he and everyone he is associated with, as well as his predecessor and all that George W. Bush was associated with, have deliberately, purposefully undermined the law. They are the criminals in this case. I was thinking yesterday and wondering, what is it that makes Snowden different than most all of those he worked with? Most all of those in the U.S. Congress? Different than most all of those in the administration? In fact, I can say all of those, with exception there are three individuals who became aware that this was occurring and did everything that they could possibly do to make America aware that its country was no longer abiding by its constitution. We will tell that story in future days. But apart from those three individuals, there is no one in Congress, no senator, no head of any department or even officer in any department in Washington, and no one in this administration, not a single soul that's on the right side of this argument, that recognizes the issue here is that America cannot disavow its Constitution and survive. That the moment the Constitution is undermined in a country that is a republic and based upon the rule of law, you have nothing but anarchy. At that point, the leaders become dictators. And so I was wondering, what is it that causes Snowden to be different than the others? I don't know the young man. It's kind of like the story of Moshe, when we were only told one unique aspect of his background. You know, with Moshe, God told us that he had a thick tongue, so he could not articulate words easily. And that turned out to be the most telling of all possible insights. Because God, through that statement, was telling us that, you know, it's not a matter of pronouncing my name perfectly. It's not a matter of articulating my testimony perfectly. It's all a matter of your willingness to do it. God is more than capable of, in fact, enjoys working through flawed implements because we're interesting. That's why he created the universe. So with Snowden, I know it's not divine revelation, but what he did was as akin to divine as anything we've seen in this country in a very long time. Rather than looking for this young man to bring him to justice, I would be naming schools after him and I would begin conducting parades in his honor. He exposed the criminals. He exposed the grave threats to America, which is the American government. So what is it, what one thing do we know about Snowden that is different than everyone else that he was associated with above him, that could have done the right thing, that had the opportunity to do the right thing, but couldn't figure it out, still is on the wrong side of this argument, all of them?
He never graduated high school.
There you go. That is correct. What is it that most politicians and those who head departments like the CIA and NSA, congressmen and senators, what do they have in common?
All long backgrounds of education.
Yeah, and a huge percentage of them in the most prestigious Eastern universities, which are the ultimate bastions of political correctness. Those like Obama, who went to Ivy League schools, as so many of these idiots did, are no longer able to be moral. Having been indoctrinated in political correctness, they are not capable any longer of exercising good judgment. I mean, yes, they don't have the proclivity to do so. They don't have the right attitude. They don't have the right background and perspective to do so. But it doesn't even matter. They're incapable of it. The one thing that sets this young man apart from the others is that he was not indoctrinated in a politically correct university. He could actually see that what the United States government was doing was criminal and that it was absolutely disastrous. That its consequence was that the nation itself could not stand, could not survive what its government was doing. And it is that severe. When a nation, based upon laws, universally not only ignores those laws, but contradicts those laws, and then pounds their chest saying, it's good for you that we are ignoring our own constitution. It cannot survive. It will not survive. This young man was able to look at the evidence, compare what was happening to the U.S. Constitution, and he was able to exercise good judgment. And he did the right thing. No one else in Washington seems capable of it. They're all on the wrong side. It's the consequence of political correctness. It's the consequence of generations after generations of Americans, and same thing is true with those in Western Europe and in many other countries around the world, being educated in an environment that is far more about indoctrination than it is education, in an environment where the ultimate sin is exercising good judgment, being discriminating. This is what we're left with. We're going to speak more about Snowden in the days that follow. I want to complete the story of David Headley, and that's where we're going to turn now. The reason the story of David Headley is so essential is because Dianne Feinstein, the head of the United States Senate Committee on Intelligence, the person most responsible from a legislative branch for the enactment of Spygate, if you will, of Americans wholesale disregarding the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the seizure without justification of people's private information. She gave an excuse. She gave a justification for violating her oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution, and it was the arrest of David Headley, who she said was plotting the Mumbai attacks, not only had plotted the Mumbai attacks, but she, by imposing this kind of a broad net of confiscating people's private data, that he was brought to justice. Now, not only was that untrue, meaning that she lied to protect her malfeasance in terms of undermining the U.S. Constitution. David Headley's arrest had nothing to do with the search of the Internet through PRISM, nor, of course, of the Verizon wiretaps, not so much wiretaps as timing, place, duration of call, and who you called. Nothing to do with that. And so the case that she used to justify the invasion of our privacy had nothing to do whatsoever with the invasion of our privacy. But far worse than that, David Headley happens to be one of the most explicit examples of the United States government knowingly, deliberately, purposefully aiding and abetting terrorism. Rather than stopping terrorism, the United States government is amongst its sponsors. Now, when you recognize that the head of the Senate Intelligence Community, who has full knowledge of everything I have shared with you in previous programs and are going to continue to share with you in this program, she, Dianne Feinstein, had full knowledge of everything I'm sharing with you and knows explicitly that the United States government in the David Headley case was directly involved in sponsoring terrorism rather than stopping it. And she uses that as an excuse, lying that the invasion of Americans' privacy through PRISM stopped this. When you're equipped with those facts, and if your conscience still works, if you're still capable of being judgmental, then you will no longer be patriotic. You will join me in walking away from politics. You will see that the U.S. government is way too corrupt to justify ever pledging your allegiance to a flag, or standing and putting your hand over your heart as you sing a national anthem. You'll no longer vote for the lesser of two evils. If you are rational, if you are aware, you will distance yourself from your country, recognizing that your government is not worthy. It is not only corrupt, it's counterproductive. It is doing things that are destructive to your freedom, not protecting your freedoms. So when we return to Shattering Myths, we're going to continue with the David Headley story because it is the most insightful aspect of Spygate. And then we will turn our attention to Snowden, to his background, and to the response of those in Washington, D.C., when they got caught being criminals. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to continue now with the David Headley story. David Headley's second wife, at least we think she is the second wife, Faiza Al-Talha. At least she was a Muslim before she married Headley. His previous wife was not a Muslim, but was forced to convert to Islam. In both cases, of course, the nature of Islam is so violent and so demeaning of women that Headley beat both wives. The first, after receiving so many beatings, ultimately had the wherewithal, the courage to leave him. She went to the FBI and reported that Headley was a terrorist planning terrorist attacks. Of course, the FBI, it was James Clapper himself, dismissed the report, did not pass it on to the Indian authorities, and as a direct result, the Mumbai terrorist attacks happened. It turns out that Headley was more than just a fundamentalist Muslim planning attacks. He was planning attacks on behalf of the United States government and on behalf of Pakistan. Anyway, this woman, his second wife, along with Headley, visited India twice. In 2007, she flew from Mumbai to Mumbai from Karachi, Pakistan, and she stayed with Headley in the Taj Mahal Hotel and the Arborai Trident. Both of those hotels were the two hotels that were attacked during the Mumbai terrorist raid that was perpetrated not only by Pakistan but in cooperation with the United States. Both, of course, were the leading targets in 2008, and in 2008 she crossed from Pakistan a second time. They have since been divorced. But once she divorced her husband, Headley, David Headley, the CIA and DEA agent of the U.S. government, the ISI agent for Pakistan, in addition to being a member of Lakshbar E. Taiba and also a convicted drug smuggler, in his case, heroin. Headley was as obvious an Islamic terrorist as there could ever be. And yet this very man now that is trying to capture and slander Snowden, James Clapper, is the very man who received the briefings and actually heard all of the testimony regarding Headley and did nothing, in fact, blessed Headley and allowed him to continue in his role, CIA, DEA, and ultimately perpetrate the terrorist attack in Mumbai. Indian investigators were surprised how easily Headley had obtained a visa to enter India, a process that is extremely difficult for Pakistani nationals. Headley's U.S. passport, his new Western and English-sounding name, and the fact that the passport and visa application made no mention of his prior name or his father's nationality made it easy for him to obtain an Indian visa and therefore scout the sites for the Mumbai terrorist attack. Well, he got his special passport with his phony name, because he was working for the DEA and the CIA. He falsely stated on his visa application that his father's name was William Headley and that his own name at birth was Headley, a claim that is difficult to refute on a U.S. passport because, unlike an Indian one, it does not require endorsements on name changes by the passport holder. So Islamic terrorists know that all you have to do to disguise the fact that you're an Islamic terrorist is change your Arabic name to a Western name. That's all you need to do. So where's the problem? The problem is with the U.S. government. Most in India have demanded explanations why Headley was allowed to travel freely between India, Pakistan, and the United States, and why he was working undercover for the DEA at the time. Also, Indian analysts have concluded that David Headley was a double agent, working for the Central Intelligence Agency, allegedly to infiltrate Lakshbar-e-Taiba. As soon as Headley was arrested in Chicago, the Indian media had a barrage of questions for the government about him, whose answers were obviously slow in coming. They wanted to extradite him to India. That's where he committed the crime. So here's the United States threatening countries around the world to extradite Snowden, a man who did not commit a crime, killed no one, did America a unbelievably valuable service, and crying that by international law, they have to return him. And here is David Headley, who's responsible for the murder of 166 people in a ruthless terrorist attack in India, and the United States is unwilling to extradite him. It's because he was working for the U.S. government at the time. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. We're talking about the David Headley case, where the United States government was actually a sponsor of international terrorism, and yet Senator Dianne Feinstein of the Senate Intelligence Committee cited David Headley as the example of how spying on Americans using PRISM and the telephone confiscation of personal data protected us from terrorism in the David Headley case. When you have something this egregious, where Dianne Feinstein knows the history of David Headley. I mean, David Headley is a big deal in terms of the U.S. Intelligence community. He is the ultimate vulnerability in the U.S. intelligence community. So by having Dianne Feinstein use him as an example of this is why what we did is good, as opposed to this is why you should never trust the U.S. government, what she is really saying is that 99.9999% of the people who receive this information, whether they be journalists or average Americans, are stupid. They're incapable of being rational. They have no clue as to whether or not it even makes sense to validate what is being said. She knows they're way too apathetic. to search the history of David Headley for themselves. She knows that even if they were to search it, they wouldn't be able to put the pieces together to say, wait a minute. Rather than this justifying spying on Americans, this justifies the reasons we should not trust the U.S. government. She's ultimately saying, you know, my constituents are way too stupid, too indoctrinated, too trusting, too dependent to ever question anything I'm saying. She is speaking down to the vast majority of people in this country and to the world. As soon as Headley was arrested in Chicago, the India media said, we want you to extradite him. So did the Indian government. But hypocritically, and any time you see hypocrisy in these kinds of cases, the United States demanding that Snowden be extradited, and yet not being willing to extradite a mass murderer like Headley, you know that you should never trust anyone who is hypocritical in this regard. The Indian investigators wanted the FBI to share its tapes of Headley's communications with his Pakistani handlers so they could match those with those voices taped on the cell phones during the Mumbai attack. The U.S. government refused. Why? Because it would become obvious to the world that the United States was employing David Headley, and they had full foreknowledge of the Mumbai attacks and refused to stop them. News reports in October 2010 revealed that U.S. authorities had much advanced knowledge about Headley's terrorist associations and his planned activities. Headley's American and Moroccan wives had both contracted American authorities, read the FBI. One in 2005, one in 2007. 1 year before and 3 years before the Mumbai attacks, they both told the FBI that he was planning terrorist attacks on behalf of the Pakistani government in India, and they named the specific sites. The person who was briefed and made the decision to do nothing was James Clapper, the man now who is the most shrill voice against Snowden. They complained about his terrorist activities. The Moroccan wife told reporters that she had even been shown the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad photographs of during their stay of the Taj Mahal Hotel in Mumbai, warning them that he was working on behalf of Lashkar-e-Taiba and the ISI. No, we didn't learn about David Headley from PRISM. We didn't learn about David Headley from telephone tapping, Dianne Feinstein. We learned about David Headley not only from his wives, but also from the CIA and DEA for whom he worked. Since Headley's guilty plea, India's home minister was repeatedly asked why the U.S. would not extradite Headley to India. The answer to that one is quite simple, because the truth is embarrassing to the United States. That's why they want Snowden. The truth of what the United States is doing, not only to its citizens, but worldwide, is embarrassing to the United States. The United States doesn't like to be embarrassed. Analysts and some media outlets have speculated that the United States conspired to have Headley work undercover, despite knowledge that he was involved in plotting specific terrorist acts in India and then in Denmark. In June 2010, U.S. National Security Advisor James Jones announced that India's National Investigation Agency had finally been given permission to speak to Headley. This is, though, after the plea deal with Headley had been accepted, where Headley was told that we will not extradite you to India. We're going to give you a very light sentence for what you have done. We're going to put you in a real cushy institution where no one will be able to threaten your life. And all you have to do is endure a few hours of Indian questions. You choose to say whatever you wish. The investigation has confirmed that Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorists carried out the Mumbai attacks under the guidance of and the control of Pakistan's Inner Services Intelligence, their ISI. That means that the United States, which is the chief sponsor of the Pakistani government and its ISI, and has used its ISI in funneling billions of dollars of weapons to the Taliban and to Al-Qaeda, helped fund the Mumbai terrorist attacks. Not only had an agent working for them that was responsible for planning the attacks, but actually funded them. The United States government. The very government that said they stopped terrorism by using PRISM to arrest Headley was the government that was using Headley to promote terrorism. Headley stated that the ISI was engaged with Lashkar commanders responsible for the Mumbai deaths and injuries at each and every stage of the plot. They're the ones who called into the Mumbai jihadists and told them that the death of a Jew and the torture of a Jew was worth 50 times more than the death and the torture of anyone else, telling you that this was religiously inspired, not politically inspired. Headley mentioned that Major Samir Ali, Major Iqbal, and Major Haroon Askew, who are all serving officers currently in the Pakistani army, collaborated with the LAT. Lashkar-e-Taiba. This notion that the United States, who sends billions of dollars to Pakistan to aid Pakistan as an alleged ally in the war against terrorism, having sent over $20 billion to Pakistan since 9/11 in 2001, that the United States government knows absolutely and unequivocally that Pakistan is the world's leading sponsor of terrorism, and that they do so directly through the Pakistani army, they do so directly through the Pakistani ISI, and that these terrorist organizations like the Taliban and like Lashkar-e-Taiba are controlled by, sponsored by, funded by, guided by the Pakistani government, and yet this government sends its taxpayer dollars over to Pakistan so that they can continue to perpetrate terrorist acts. That means the United States government is a co-sponsor of terrorism. Dianne Feinstein knew this. She knew that by mentioning David Headley, all of this would be learned by anyone willing to investigate the evidence for themselves. Headley has also spoken of how the ISI wanted the Lashkar-e-Taiba to disown the Mumbai attacks in order to prevent global attention to the terrorist group. The Pakistani government considers the Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorist group to be an important strategic asset to be used against India, just like the U.S. Marines. With Akmal Kassab as the only terrorist captured, the ISI wanted to blame the terrorist act on Al-Qaeda. And they used that theme. These were Al-Qaeda-inspired terrorists. And you know something? It would have worked. The world is so fixated with Al-Qaeda, it would have, the lie would have prevailed, except Lashkar-e-Taiba said, no, it wasn't. That didn't have anything to do with Al-Qaeda. It was us. We did it. We're proud of it. And had the leaders of Lashkar-e-Taiba not specifically taken credit for it, Zakur Rahman Lakhvi, taken specific credit for perpetrating the attack, the lie probably would have worked, just as the United States has lied and said that Al-Qaeda was responsible for the 9/11-2001 attacks. The United States government wants to blame everything on Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda-linked groups when Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda-linked groups have almost nothing to do with any of this. And it would have worked in Pakistan as well, had the actual perpetrators not claimed credit. On January 24, 2013, Headley was convicted by the United States Federal Court in Chicago, and that's really not true. He pled for his part in the 2008 Mumbai attacks. That's interesting. That why would the United States have jurisdiction of a terrorist attack in India? Why did they not extradite him so he could be tried in India for the terrorist attacks in India that killed 166 people? Dianne Feinstein, are you listening? Based upon the recommendation of the prosecutors in the case, he was sentenced to 35 years in prison. Yes, the prosecutors work for the U.S. government. David Headley was a U.S. government employee. He was an agent of the U.S. government. 35 years prison. The last two times that he had been convicted to a prison sentence, the Justice Department recommended that he be released. You know, remember the time right before this, he was convicted for importing heroin on behalf of the Pakistani government into the United States. He was released so they could continue to employ him. The judge in the case stated that the sentence was sufficient to put him under lock and key for the rest of his life and that he would never be in a position again to commit a terrorist attack. It wasn't a terrorist attack. It was an Islamic attack. And the U.S. government was complicit. However, others, including the survivors of the attack, have been critical of the sentence, saying that the length was an appalling dishonor, that Headley had no right to live. Headley could have faced up to a maximum sentence of life in prison, but he got a lighter sentence due to his cooperation with U.S. federal prosecutors. In other words, he told them everything that Dianne Feinstein knew that she did not disclose to the American people. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the stories associated with America justifying its destruction, annulment of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution so that it can spy on its citizens. Mike Rogers, who is the chairman, he's a congressman, and he's chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, so he would be Dianne Feinstein's counterpart. So Mike Rogers is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, while Dianne Feinstein is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. She says that the inflammatory comments that have been made about the spying revelations do not properly reflect, according to Mike Rogers, what Dianne and I know this program really does. He said there are instances where it has produced good. Yes, destroying the U.S. Constitution, ignoring it, has produced good. It's kind of like the religious myths, you know. There are places where religion has caused people to do good. So, you know, you just disregard the fact that it's inherently bad. Because if there's something that's good that comes out of something that is inherently bad, then how can it be inherently bad? Now, that's the kind of evaluation that so many people do that aren't willing to consider the evidence and be rational about it, be moral about it. And they will say, you know, well, America is still the greatest country on earth. Some of this stuff may be true, but I'm still going to salute the flag and pledge my allegiance and honor the troops because America is the greatest country on earth. And let's just say that it is the best of an evil lot. And let's say that America, it's right, it does some good around the world. Just change the fact that its government is predominantly evil. Change the fact that its military has been predominantly destructive and counterproductive. Change the fact that it has bankrupt the nation. Does it change the fact that most everything its leading officials say is a lie? Why would you support something that evil? Just because there is some good that comes from the evil? You know, Robin Hood produced some good. But he made a living by stealing. It wasn't his money. So here is Mike Rogers saying, oh, yeah, this program, it's done some good. It has disrupted plots. It's prevented terrorist acts. Oh, but those plots and those terrorist acts that it's disrupted, that's all classified. So just trust me. I'm lying to you. But trust me about this. That's what's so hard about this, Roger said, is that I know that it's done some really good stuff, but it's all classified. It's like the Wizard of Oz. Don't you look behind that curtain. James Clapper office declassified some details of the program, which it said were conducted under the authorities widely known and discussed and fully debated and authorized by Congress. Yes, that's what the president wants you to believe, too. You know, this is a court that was, that's a secret court that was established to get the legal blessing for all of this. You know, in the last few years, do you know how many requests by the feds, the FBI, CIA, and NSA, it has turned down? None. We'll talk when we receive the story printed in USA Today of three whistleblowers in the NSA prior to Snowden about the fact that Congress is also not a check and balance, that those who are briefed in Congress very seldom even listen to the briefings. They're fed a bunch of lies. They end up having to trust whatever the CIA and NSA is telling them, which is almost never true. And then James Clapper telling the Congress in a sworn statement that he was not conducting operations that now we know he was under prison. Flatly denied them, when in fact he knew full well they were happening. Perjury, lying to Congress. And so some congressmen are just flat out played for fools. They are inadequately briefed and misled, and so they're operating on bad data. And others know but don't want the people to know. U.S. officials said earlier that the phone call data isn't looked at unless investigators sense a tie to terrorism. So in other words, we're capturing all this, but we're not even looking at it unless we sense that there's a tie to terrorism. And then only with the authority of a judge. Yeah, the authority of a judge. Judges who operate in secret and who have never turned down a request. Officials say that analysts are forbidden from collecting internet activity of American citizens or residents, something we have subsequently learned is also a lie, even when they travel overseas. And Obama tried to reassure Americans about the program, saying, nobody is listening to your telephone calls. Unless they want to. And then they do. We'll return to this story and Clapper's comments on prison tomorrow.